Hello, Survivor fans, and welcome back for episode 8 of season 23. This is the Tribal Council podcast. I am your host, Ralph, with my co-host, Chris.
Hey.
And this is the beefiest episode we've had to date, and thank goodness for that.
Beefy, huh?
Beefy. We've got a lot in store for you today. We're going to talk a lot of Cochran. He's our boy. And
wait, first we need to memorialize Anytober. It's over.
Hey, no one is hurting for Anytober harder than this guy. All right,
let me
tell you.
Okay. I'm going to have to say, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
I'm going to tell you right now, my only prayer going to bed on Halloween was that I'd wake up to Anyvember, but that was not to be the case. So,
and the world is better for it.
It is. No. Shut your mouth. Be quiet. The scene opens on, what, Savai Island?
Savai Island? I don't know if they have their own island, but sure.
The Savai Camp. You know, there was so much going on later on. I actually rewatched significant portions of the episode later, so I kind of forget what happened my notes are kind of incomplete, so help me out here. All I have is Keith saying, giving Cochran crap about not going to Redemption Island, and basically him saying, I don't let my others fight my battles for me, which I thought was a whole...
Yeah. Keith's just an idiot. Like, yeah, fine. You don't let others fight your battles for you. But, like, oh, by the way, when someone else wants to go instead of you, you let them. That's just, like, that's Survivor 101. I mean.
I think Cochran has put on a clinic of avoiding elimination. I think, you know, at this point, he's certainly playing on house money, so I'm not going to begrudge him for anything, and certainly Keith is not in a position to say anything like that. So until Keith finds himself in that position, he doesn't really get to say anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is like poker here, you know. If someone wants to fold their hand, you let them fold their hand, you know. Unless you're holding the absolute nuts, you let them fold their hand.
Right, yeah. Well, that's just the way I live my life, Chris. I would let the hand show down, you know, because I don't want to let, you know, folding fight the battle for me, you know.
Right.
So stupid. So, flash ahead to the Elimination Challenge, Redemption Island, and the thought occurred to me as they walked in. I was like, is Probst going to spoil this whole party before it even starts?
Yeah, I give Probst credit for not selling them out, as he sometimes likes to do.
Would he have sold out if he didn't know about the plot? Like, they didn't mention it at Tribal Council. Do you think he still would have spoiled the party some? Like, hey, how about you volunteering to go to Redemption Island today, huh?
Well, yeah, I guess he could have done that. I thought you meant more like, if he wasn't in on any of it and then, you know, saw what a bad acting job Ozzy did and called him out on that or something.
Right.
I mean, that was... It was unbelievable how bad that was. I mean, it's worth pointing out that, you know, this is a poker lesson. It's, you know, less is more, right? Like... Don't hem and haw like crazy, making all the audible sighs you can, and then out of nowhere shove all your chips in. Like, that's a tell. We know you are just trying to sell that you have a bad hand when really you don't. It's the same thing here. Like, he tried to sell way, way too hard.
I mean, you know, we yeah, that is our medium of expression, is poker. And I think you and I would have both, like, you know, if not seen right through it, at least had the red flag open our heads, like, okay, something's going on.
Oh, yeah. Halfway through it, you pick your two cards up and you hold them up ready to fold them until he finally pushes his chips in, because you know that's what's coming. You know that's how bad an acting job he's doing. So you're like, okay, just do it so that I can muck my hand, because I know. I did, however, notice... as you called it last time, Cochran sitting just a little bit away. And the best part is he understands what we're talking about. Like, he didn't sit like two body lengths away from the rest of the tribe. That would be selling it too much. He sat like,
and he didn't
six
sit
extra
there,
inches.
He didn't sit there all proud, like, look what I've done. I've put Ozzy into the arena, you know?
Right, yeah. And he just sort of sat there. Well, he sat there a little gloomy, as makes sense, because if he had pulled off what they claim he pulled off, the rest of the tribe would have given him hell about it, or, you know, would have been pissed about it. So, you know, he'd be coming off of a you know, 10 hours of Cochran, you suck, why are you on our tribe, you know? So you could see how he would look like that. You know, I thought there was a chance that Cochran might actually salvage this awful B movie that was being put together. Of course, it turned out that he didn't, but, you know, Ozzy couldn't get a role as an extra in a music video.
Which is funny, because he is actually, he has had professional acting work.
Seriously?
Yeah, he actually was in, like, a very, like, softcore porno sort of film. You can
You're
look this
kidding!
Up. I'm not making this up, no.
He was in a softcore porno, like a Skinamax kind of thing or something?
Yeah, no, I'm really not making this up. So, what's Ozzy's last name?
I don't know.
Ozzy Survivor... what is it? Ozzy Lust.
Lust? L-U-S-T-H?
Lust.
Yeah. That, I mean, that almost sounds like a porno name.
It's almost. He appeared on American Ninja Warrior.
What is that?
It's like... you don't watch American Ninja Warrior?
Sorry, no. I draw the line at the Real World Road Rules Challenge. Actually, I don't even watch that anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna find this stuff.
See, this is where we need a stat boy so that you can actually continue to engage in conversation and let somebody else look it up and then.
Sorry. This is not riveting podcasting. Let's get back on track here.
Yeah.
And so,
our listener count just went from 19 to 14.
No, they appreciate what we're doing here. Sure. So, what do you think about Christine employing a hasty strategy and not allowing, you know, her stick to be strong and well sturdified?
Oh, I mean, I'll just go back to what I said when they did this challenge. Like my comments from the podcast last year. From I guess it would have to have been episode 3 because it would have been the first challenge.
Yep.
Were employ a multi-stick strategy where you put two that are just reinforcing each other, like right next to each other, and then you bind a third one, you know, sticking its end in the groove created by the other two.
And you alternate one stick, two stick?
You alternate one stick, two stick. It doesn't slow you down anymore because you're still tying just as many knots.
That's a good
point.
Just,
and then the other thing I would do is I would have tied an extra string around the very end to create a lip so that when I go to hook the key, I've got something to hold the key there so that it's not just getting ready to slide off. I mean, it immediately came flooding back to me from that podcast. And, I mean, this is great. If they keep Redemption Island around and I somehow end up on Survivor, I'm gonna be a well-oiled machine for
you
that
have all
challenge.
Those games figured out. You're like the guy at the carnival who upsets all the carnies.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That said, I mean, Ozzy killed it. He did the other thing that is the smart thing to do there, and he double-bound each joint. You know,
but his joints were longer because he used more overlap in his...
Well, yeah, he overlapped them more,
yeah.
And then he double-bound them, right. Putting a string
this
close
not,
to each
this
end.
This is not
of the
why
overlap.
The 12 people who are listening to us are listening. Let's get to the meat. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Cochran has this great soliloquy before they go to the break where he talks about how, you know, finally the fate of the game is in his hands. He has an opportunity to shape how Survivor South Pacific will play out, and I thought it really got to the heart of what he's facing. Like, he's finally got himself in a position where he has some control, whether, you know, it's well-gotten or not, to affect this game, and he's really going to sort of relish the opportunity to change the game.
Yeah, he seems, I mean, he's doing what he can do. I mean, he's a student of the game, he understands it all, he's watched it for 22 seasons or whatever, so... You know, he's been put into a position where his strengths can actually shine. I don't know if they're actually going to or not, but he at the very least is looking to seize that moment, and that's a good thing. because we've just, you know, what we've really seen a lot of from Cochran so far is shying away from a moment. So,
I don't know. He's just like, I mean, it's like the moments like going into Redemption Island is what he's shying away from. Like, he's just, like, for him, it's literally just make it to the next tribal. Like, just don't go out on this one so you can play
again.
Yeah. So,
well, I just in general, his MO is shy away from the moment, is, you know, keep the glare off me in whatever way I can. Like, almost literally sometimes, like, I'm not going to get in the water and take my shirt off. Like,
yeah, you're really,
you know, it's, yeah. It's shy away from the moment. And I'm, which makes sense for him because he's been on the radar so much that, you know, he just wants to not be on the radar.
Yeah. I'm sure it's pretty exhausting having to scramble each week the way he is and find out if he's the one or not.
Yeah.
You know, flash ahead to the merge, and, you know, everyone talks about how the two sides are pretty entrenched, so there's a little bit of niceness, but everyone goes back to playing the game. And, you know, Cochran sits down for a coach and kind of confesses how bad he's feeling over there, and coach blows it up right in his face immediately.
So there's two things that happen there. First off, I think there was one thing that was good that happened, and granted, we probably didn't see the entire exchange, but it felt like Cochran didn't actually go into any of the lie. You know, like, most of what he was saying were things that were already true. You know, were actually true. You know, he's selling them a little harder because they want to pull off this ruse where he's like a weasel and he's looking to defect and all that. But he didn't actually have to go into any of that before Coach called him out on it. Which is sort of good.
It was amazing how much Coach had of it down, like, you know, this didn't happen, here's what you have, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I thought Cochran did a pretty amazing job of not cracking at that point and being like...
Yeah, sort you of, could...
Like, if I get caught in a lie like that, I squirm like no one else. Like, I really am not comfortable getting caught in lies
like that. I feel
like
you could see it on his face. I feel like you could see it on his face a little bit. Like, that he's like, okay, I'm busted here. Like, I feel like you could see the heat, like, running to his face. You know what I mean? Like when you get caught in a lie, like, you could feel the adrenaline, like, rushing through your body, and suddenly your face just feels, like, super hot. Like, I feel like you could see that on Cochran's face. Like, I could see his face getting warmer. Like, I didn't see beads of sweat or anything, but I feel like you could see his face getting warmer.
It was admirable, at least, in the effort he put up to try to resist the breaking in front of Coach. But, you know, as it plays out, we end up seeing him, you know, kind of drop the act anyways, you know, not too much longer after that.
Yeah. On the other hand, I really don't like Coach calling him out on the move. Because, as we've said a million times, this is a game of information. Like, and I think this is one of those things where it's like, you've got a read on your opponent. It's just like poker. You've got a read on your opponent. You don't tell him you have the read on him. You use that read to your advantage.
So you take the bait and lay low.
Yes. You take the bait, you lay low, you feed him a little bit of misinformation, and you use that to your advantage. Like, coaches basically played the card that he was just handed a card to play because they did such a piss poor acting job selling this ruse. And he took that card and turned right around and played it. Like, he didn't sit on it and wait for an opportune moment to play it, you know?
Yeah. No, that's an angle I hadn't thought of. I mean, how, you know, at this point, you use him, you find out what they want from you.
Yeah.
You feed him a lie, like, we're going to vote for this person.
Exactly.
They blow the idol on them.
There were so many opportunities in this episode for misinformation in both directions that were not used. You know?
That's a good point.
Like, Coach, right there, Coach had an opportunity for misinformation. Cochran, later on, when he's decided he's going to just open up the playbook, is not using it for misinformation. Like, when he turns around and decides, you know what, like, clearly they're on to me, there's no point in even trying to sell it anymore, I'll just open up the playbook to them and tell them this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and make it seem like I actually really do want to flip to them in, like, triple agent status or whatever. Like, he could have used that to his, because the thing is they started to trust him. He could have used that to their, to his advantage. Like, they're going to trust him because he's opening up the double agent playbook, and he could have gone to triple or even quadruple agent,
right.
I think.
What level are we at?
Well, they think he's going to triple agent because he's opened up the double agent playbook, so he's really flipping, but he's not flipping on the initial level, he's flipping on the third level.
But then he goes quadruple agent by using their trust of his triple agent.
Yes.
To, you know, better his game and his position.
Yes. Like, when he's having that conversation...
So how do you use that? I want to hear
when
this.
He's having that conversation with Sophie, where he's opening up the double agent playbook to her as if he's going to the triple agent level, like, he should have misinformed to because the thing is, like, he's well aware that he's in the position where if anybody's going to flip, it's going to be him. But that flipping... He needs to make that flipping his last resort, because clearly that is not a great scenario for him, right?
Yeah, to be at the bottom of seven.
Right, yeah, he moves from being the bottom of six to the bottom of seven. That's a step in the wrong direction. So he should instead be using that, like, that conversation that he has with Sophie, where he tells her, we were going to vote for you, now we're going to vote for Rick, we're going to give Whitney the idol. Feed her misinformation there. She's buying all of this. Like, feed her some misinformation. Tell her you're gonna give the idol to Whitney, and then tell Ozzy, don't give it to Whitney. They think you're giving it to Whitney. Because, by the way, they still think you're selling this double agent thing. You know?
Okay, I want to see you come up with this plan after 20 days on an island, not eating enough, not sleeping enough.
I don't have anything else to do on that island. What the heck else am I going to do? I'm gonna cook up these little plans. I don't know why.
So are you telling me they should have, like, run through these contingencies? Like, look,
I give them credit. They call
you out.
A lot.
Here's where we go.
Yeah, no, they ran through a lot. Like, they thought about, like, okay, so if it comes to rocks, then the people who weren't voted for can randomly get eliminated. So they'll probably want to vote for Whitney, so that Whitney doesn't end up getting. Being safe from the random rock draw, and then Jim and Keith are both eligible for the random rock draw. Like, that was smart, but they only applied all this little game theory stuff to
at the first and second level. It was not like,
well, they only applied it, like, to the vote. They didn't apply it to this little game that's going on. Like, had they just given up on this, on the Cochrane double agent thing? Had they given up on that?
It seemed like getting caught with their pants down, they had no plan B.
But I don't think
on how to, like...
Like, I don't feel like they really did realize that they had been caught. Like, they only gave up the ruse at Tribal Council. So prior to Tribal Council, I feel like they still thought it was going okay.
I'm guessing it's because Cochrane hadn't come back and said, look, we're stuck, you know? Did that ever happen? Do you ever be like, look, they...
Yeah, it just seems like they're, like, for a plan that had a lot of different moving parts, they did not have... when you have a plan with that many moving parts, you need to have communication. And they were not communicating. And part of it is because, yeah, as Cochrane
it would have given up the...
Yeah, Cochrane is now in a position of power, at least a little bit, and so he doesn't want to give that up. And I understand that, but... I feel like he's not playing it that well.
He also played it by giving Ozzy back the idol.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, there's a degree to which I understand the move. Like, it was so, you know, if he sits on it, then he draws the ire of his entire tribe right away, and, you know, risks being voted out. If they end up winning the Battle of Wills with Upolu, you know. Two people later, he's going to get lopped off because they don't even need his vote anymore. So, you know, I can understand it, except for the fact that he then turns around and flips and draws their ire anyway.
Right.
So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
That's where it doesn't make sense. If he knew he was leaning towards flipping, and they clearly, he knew he was gonna, they were going to be, like, severely pissed at him. Like,
yeah.
He didn't, it's not like this surprised him at all.
No.
So, at that point, you know you're going to burn the bridges. Why extend this olive branch of, hey, I gave you back the idol. I don't know.
Yeah. So what about Dawn's role in all of this, in the flipping scenario? What are your thoughts there?
You know, with the first little clip they have before they even go to the immunity challenge, where, you know, they're walking back from tree mail and she's breaking down and she's sort of sympathizing with what, you know, Cochran's going through. I thought it was an amazing moment. I was like, wow, this is really great. She really kind of gets, like, what he's had to put up with for the last, you know, 19 days or whatever on this island. And what I wrote down was, I typed in my notes, I was like, oh, Dawn remains a good person after 3 weeks of play, and it seemed like these emotions were really genuine, and that, like, she was really happy for him, and that she would actually, you know, maybe take action that seemed to be against her best interests and flip with Cochran. But then it all gets neutered the next day when she says that she thought about the experiences she's had and the people she spent time with, and they had qualities that she liked, and it was awful to me. I was like, because I thought the stuff that she had said the day before actually had some weight to it, but everything that she was saying afterwards just seemed like she got really cold feet about doing something that takes some balls to do, which is to flip on your original alliance, which wasn't even her alliance. Like, she's not even in.
Right. Well, and then on top of it, it's not even, like, but the other thing is she's not even flipping because it's some bold move or, you know, it's going to further in the game. She was going to flip as some part, as some bigger statement that probably wasn't even going to be a statement, because it's not like Probst after the vote was going to be like sideline reporting with her, Dawn, why'd you flip? And, you know, she says that was for all the little guys out there.
Yeah,
you know,
there's, like, still some, I mean, she still gets it in the confessionals. She still gets to say, like, look, you know, I don't want to play with Ozzy and Jim and Keith, who are so bullyish and, like, you know, very much like, you know, you don't belong, Cochran. And I thought that was a genuine sentiment that she had. And having her flip on it is like, you know, like, who are you? Like, why are you even, like, trying to express any kind of genuine sympathy in this game if you're going to, like, sympathize with the people who will literally, you know, use Cochran as much as they can? And if he doesn't play along, they don't respect the fact that he is a player in this game, and they don't. And I think they showed that at the end of the episode. They have no respect for the game that he's trying to play. You know, and it's nothing that hasn't been done before. There's nothing he's doing that hasn't been done before.
Who, Cochran?
Yeah.
Okay, so are you saying that you agree with their judgment?
I'm saying Dawn's logic is flawed, and that, like, you know, she should have, you know, gone with her original hunch that, like, you know, these people are as awful as they seem, and that they need to be held accountable in game by, you know, not aligning yourself with them.
Yeah, but on the flip side, it's like, I don't know, that whole bit from her kind of bugged me, because I was just like, you know, this is what we talk about a lot, you know. We know what we came here to do. We came here to play Survivor. And so, like, we shouldn't be picking bones about that. You know, like, why are people signing up for Survivor with the mentality of, I'm going to change the way people play Survivor, I'm going to make it into an ethical game or something? Like, are people really signing up with that mentality? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I think there are people who are signing up for the experience of it, and not necessarily because they're hitching their star to $1 million. I think Dawn is one of the people...
Go on a freaking safari, man.
Okay, but at the same time, like, this is what they find to be the challenge. So they want to go out there, they want to see how far they can make in the game without sacrificing whatever, you know, code of ethics they came into the game with. And it appeared to me, at least based on her breakdown with Cochran, that she had remained that way. And for her to, like, say that what Cochran was doing was appealing to emotion, and I thought it was completely hypocritical. Like, clearly, you're a person that you know, reacts...
Plays with emotions.
That plays with emotions. Like,
yeah.
Who are you to tell him not to have an emotional reaction to people beating him down for 19 days and then having an opportunity to seize power and taking that opportunity? I mean, he literally has been without control for the whole game, and now he's got a chance to do it, and you can't tell him not to take that opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
You can't tell him it's in his best interest to ally with people who will dispose of him at their first opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and that was the other interesting thing here that I saw going on, is I feel like, you know, the irony is that Cochran's getting completely used here. like, he feels like he's in this position of power and he likes it and he wants to be able to make some moves. But ultimately what's really going on, whether any of them will acknowledge this or not, and maybe they may not even be aware of it themselves, but what's really going on is Upolu read Cochrane really well. They identify, you know, this is similar, this is actually very similar to what happened, I guess, last season with Philip and Boston Rob. And, like, Boston Rob realized what Phil needed. Like, he just need, like, think about all the conversations you heard and saw between Boston Rob and Philip, where Boston Rob gave Philip what he needed. All Philip needed was ears. Philip came from a family of, like, a jillion sisters or something like that, where he was never heard, like, nobody ever pays attention to him, and Rob realized that, and just every conversation he had with him, he made Philip feel like he was really being heard. And thus, Philip was loyal to him to the end. And it's the same thing here. Like, I feel like Coach, for the most part, but I feel like some of the others as well, perhaps even Brandon, although I hesitate to grant Brandon any
credit,
any intellectual credit.
Yeah.
But they recognize that, like, Cochrane feels abused, Cochrane feels bullied, and so what Cochrane wants is a place where he's appreciated. Cochrane wants a place where he feels safe. And they offered that to him. Like, think about the things that were being said to him. Like, Coach, like, he was confrontational about it, but at the same time, like, he drew a line in the sand, and he didn't draw the line to be like, you're on that side, I'm on this side. He drew the line to say, come over to this side. And oh, by the way, like, I'm gonna protect you. And then at Tribal Council, Brandon says, stay close to me. As if Savaii is gonna, like, jump him on the walk back to camp or something. You know, but the funny thing is they're completely appealing to Cochrane's needs.
There was that whole thing. I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off again.
No, sorry. Yes, yeah.
You got really excited there.
I did.
I don't know if you noticed. You, like, really, really got excited. There was the whole thing where, like, you know, Coach calls out Cochrane on the bullshit, and he kind of sits back. He's like, but, however, I know your pain. He's like, I too have been the intellectual superior and been made to feel inferior. And it was complete, like, I know things are bad, but I'm going to stroke you and I'll make you feel better about this. And, you know, even though it feels like you have no way out right now, I'm going to give you a way out. I'm going to let you in on this. And it was, I thought it was a little bit boastful at the time, but I realize now that you're exactly right. He was sort of appealing to what Cochrane wanted to hear. He's like, look, they don't appreciate you, but here is someone who does appreciate your intellectual, you know, prowess, you know, like, the thing I can think about is, it's a terrible movie, but 300, have you seen it?
I have not seen the 300, no.
So there's Spartans versus Persians, and there's a
Spartan, I'm mildly familiar, but
there's a Spartan born with a horrible deformity, and, the leader of the Spartans refuses to allow him to join the army because they're an elite group, and he's clearly not elite, and, you know, he takes it really hard, and the leader of the Persians sees this beaten down guy and he, like, seduces him with women and power and, like, the ability to join their army, and he takes it all and, like, basically leads to the downfall of the Spartans. And it's the same kind of idea that, like, you target this guy and you give him exactly what he needs and he's going to give you kind of the key that you need to bring down the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, ultimately,
very similar.
Ultimately, like, Savaii can be mad at him all they want, and again, I hate to give the guy credit for acute observation, but Brandon was exactly right when they started giving him like Cochrane says, "I'm the one who flipped," and owns up to it, and they all get ready to start laying into him, and Brandon hits the nail on the head. He's this is exactly why he flipped, because you talk to him like this.
Right.
And it's such a trite soundbite, but it's dead on. This is this is where Savaii screwed up. Your tribe isn't strong because he never felt like he was a part of it. Like, Keith spent Keith on a daily basis reminded Cochrane why he was worthless to the tribe, and, you know, others did the same, perhaps to a lesser extent. And this is where Savaii blew it. They blew it in the first 19 days. There was nothing they could do at that point, I think.
Yeah, no, I see that point of it. You know, you mentioned that Cochran was worried about being physically harmed, and he's talking to Sophie about this, and Sophie's like, yeah, he's worried about this, and I can see why. He's the dodgeball target. And the first cut is to Jim and Keith hacking open a coconut, like Jim beating this thing with a bat, and I'm like, oh, that is so good. Like, I had to rewind it just to see it all come together.
Just paint a little red hair on the coconut.
And you know that happened, you know that scene happened like a week ago back at the other camp, like when they were just Savaii, you know, like,
right.
Like it has nothing to do with this, but they had that clip ready, and it was yep. It was perfect. You know, Coach also used women to seduce Cochran, just as the Persians did with that bent over hunchback, whatever guy. Cochran says, well, where am I going to sleep tonight, Coach? He's all worried about where he's going to be. And he's like, well, you can sleep between me and Edna. And he's like, well, or you could sleep next to Sophie. You know,
she's kind of nerdy. I didn't notice that.
She's kind of nerdy. You know, she likes bookish men.
I hadn't picked up on that.
Oh, that was, he was sending that out there, you know. Coach is a little pimp.
Yeah. I guess I could see, which way do you think Cochran goes, Edna or Sophie?
Cochran's definitely a Sophie.
Really? Yeah, I guess I agree with that now that I think about it. It's I don't know why, but it just fits.
Well, it's closer to the age range. You know, she's in school. You know, she's about to be a doctor.
Right.
He's a lawyer. You know, I know Edna's an anesthesiologist, but she's like into her 30s now. That's a little too old for Cochran.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. All right, anyways. I just put in my notes, Coach trying to arrange Cochran-Sophie marriage, and I put in parentheses, power couple.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could see Cochran being, like, not that Sophie necessarily strikes me as, like, a domineering woman or whatever, but she's way more so than Edna would ever be.
She would have the pants.
And so I could see Cochran being
and
with
the boxers
that kind.
And, like, all the male articles of clothing in that arrangement.
Yeah.
All right. Anything before we get to the immunity challenge?
No, I don't think so.
The immunity challenge is a familiar one. They did this exact same first one with a dagger, and it was the season with the old woman who won.
Oh, yeah, they had the it was two, like, metal D shapes, right?
Yeah,
and you had to
hooks.
Hold the dagger, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So same kind of challenge going on here, except ropes and coconut and...
Well, you know, again, here's what I don't like. First off, they're giving out two immunities. One, why is it one male, one female? This doesn't favor one gender over the other.
Probably basically on a muscle mass kind of thing. Like, men are physically capable of having more muscle mass than a woman. Yeah, you know, that's like.
I still don't feel
like
that favors men over women. And on top of that, doing a gender-based immunity majorly is way better for the women because there are only four women left and there are six men left.
Yeah, no, it's the other way around. It's eight. It's four and eight, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, yeah, four and eight, not four and six.
Yeah, so they have twice as good a chance at immunity as any guy does.
Yeah, that struck me as rather imbalanced.
I mean, I guess, you know, when you create the challenge, you play test, and you just notice that women literally, like, cannot hang as long as a man can. Like, you know, I guess if you made a lighter coconut, I don't know. Although that doesn't even seem fair either.
A lighter coconut?
Yeah.
All right.
Coconuts come in all shapes and sizes.
I didn't feel like there was much to talk about with this challenge otherwise.
No, I mean, unsurprisingly, I thought Dawn was certainly the favorite going in to win.
Yep.
She did.
Yep.
And I don't know if I would have placed Ozzy as the favorite to win, but we know he's a god in challenges, so that wasn't surprising either.
I was impressed with Albert's effort. He looked, insanely determined.
Yeah, and I think, I definitely saw that factor in him, you know, before the game started, or after the first couple challenges, that he was a physical specimen not to be messed with. So, we have not heard the last of Albert.
No, definitely not.
Can we talk about the merged tribe name?
What was it?
Tay Tuna.
Tay Tuna? I mean, I guess I gotta say I'm happy that we didn't have to sit through, you know, watching the conversation where they,
yeah,
you know, somebody lobs out there some completely fake story about a word meaning from the ocean or whatever, you know, baloney somebody makes up. But still, I, when they flashed it on the screen later on, like, at first I thought it said the tuna. And
yeah.
then I was, had flashbacks to, like, The Office and Andy Bernard calling Jim Tuna and all that.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. I don't know. Like, you know, generally the original tribe names kind of make sense, and they're, like, have a little mystique to them, and, you know, they kind of roll off the tongue. You know, they had one particularly good one in the history of the show that I thought was amazing.
Which was, Bayonetta?
I thought that was pretty solid. You know, that's a really
big surprise.
It's a really good tribe name.
Yeah. Call me when they have the Van Benthizo tribe or something. I think that might happen if they do like a Dutch Antilles version of this or something.
Oh yeah, they could go to like Curacao.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, they could do that, or even like which one is it? I can never remember. one of those islands. There's a bit, one of the main islands it's not Bermuda.
Do not give up hope.
One of those islands. One of those famous Caribbean islands is a Dutch property or a part of the Dutch Antilles or whatever the heck it's called.
A protectorate, maybe.
Yeah. They're still their own country, but they're a protectorate or whatever you call it. They're under the Queen's flag or whatever the hell you call it.
And usually this is the point where we kind of talk about some of the pre-tribal stuff, but we've dissected most of it.
Yeah. I think we can just talk about tribal itself.
Okay. I mean, I guess the only thing I would want to address before we get to tribal is that, you know, you kind of agreed with Jim's logic that, like, they're probably going to vote Whitney because they don't want the guys to, like, be in the thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, unto itself, I liked that dissection that he went through. You know, I don't love that they didn't bring in Cochran's, you know, N-level agent. I don't even know what level agent he's at yet anymore. But they didn't bring in Cochran's agency at all. So that part aside, I did like that analysis.
Yeah, that's a good point. They never once, like, were like, hey, what'd you pick up on the wiretaps?
Right. Yeah, it was silly. It was like this. I guess maybe they just realized how bad of a ploy it was, how badly the ploy was executed, I should say. It was a good ploy, it was just very poorly executed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they just decided to start throwing dirt on top of it and not even try to salvage anything from it.
But, I mean, why were they so tolerant of Cochran talking to everyone? Like, it never came up that, like, hey, you sure do spend a lot of time with them for them knowing what our plan is.
I definitely noticed that myself, too. It seemed like they were way okay with all the talking he was doing with them. So, like, which leads me to believe the plan was still on then or something.
Like,
you know?
Like there's some holes going on here that we don't quite get. I don't know.
They definitely, things are not in alignment there.
Yeah. It was a really fast and heavy tribal council, like, Jeff kind of goes around, fires around, and, like, I mean, there's stuff going on, but I don't know. It didn't seem like he was, like,
well,
really
I think he probably realized that it was a, you know, this was otherwise going to be, you know, what was going to be interesting was, you know, does somebody flip?
And yeah, he did.
So you
he
might
did
as
call
well just
out,
get to that.
He did call out that Jim said that he's worried about someone being mistreated and flipping, and he goes right to Cochran. And Cochran!
Yeah.
You've been talking about being beaten down and mistreated, and so how do you feel?
Yeah. But, I mean, otherwise, it was pretty clear that they were both going to try to hold their, you know, hold their line and then cross their fingers that nobody else would flip either.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, what do you think about, I mean, at no point did Coach feel any pressure that he needed to burn his immunity idol on anyone, at least to improve some of the odds of getting a rock drawn.
Yeah, that was interesting. That they not only that, and nobody else. I mean, everybody in the tribe, everybody in Opolu knows that he has it. So, and nobody felt compelled to put him on the spot about it either.
Right.
At least not that we saw. Which I thought was interesting, and that puts they've got a card they've got an ace up their sleeve in that capacity, because I don't think anybody from Savaii knows that they found theirs. What do you think about on Cochrane's flip? Do you think it was at all influenced by the fact that it was Keith that they were voting for?
No.
No, you don't think so? You think he was flipping no matter what?
I think he was going to take the opportunity to... I think maybe if it was Dawn, he would think twice, but
Well, couldn't have been, because she was immune.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think otherwise, I don't think he would have... If it was Jim or Keith or... Who's the other option? Him?
Whitney.
I mean, it's but no.
Whitney, Whitney had the idol, that's right.
It's really just Jim or Keith at that point. So whether it was Jim or Keith, I think he was going to flip.
Yeah. It just seemed like, I mean, not that it had been hidden before, but it felt like this episode, it became even more obvious that of all of the people, like, Keith definitely seems like the one that is Cochran's biggest antagonist.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, obviously, we saw... You know,
he's definitely the biggest meathead, like, of all the people
and
left.
Keith, and in this episode in particular, you know, they probably played it up a bit by making sure they could fit in the clip of him ranting about fighting his own battles and all that. But I mean, you know, it was always he was never going to get... Cochran was never going to feel like he was drawing ire from the women, so Whitney and Dawn were no big deal. And Ozzy gave him an idol, so...
And gave him a plan. Like, he gave him, a trusting moment.
Exactly.
So.
And Jim has done the same when they clipped Elise a few episodes back.
Yep.
You know, Cochran was Jim's main confidant there for that little plan. So, you know...
I see your point. I don't know if it changed anything, but I see your point. I think that's an excellent, thing to bring up. But I think what we really need to kind of, like, address here is, you know... The question I wrote down is Cochran playing for the $1 million?
What do you mean? Like is he just playing for an episode at a time?
I feel like he's playing an episode at a time, because there's no long game in what he's doing.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think you could apply that necessarily to this move, like this decision to flip, because I don't feel like sticking with his tribe was necessarily going to be long game either. I mean, I think right now the flip gives him options. As it is, he is clearly the person who's most in position to make plays with Upolu players. Right?
He's the most in play to make plays with Upolu players.
Of the Savaii people, he is in the best position to make plays with Upolu people, right?
From here on out, or in this episode?
Well, already leading up to Tribal Council, and this just helps solidify that, right?
Okay.
So in that sense, I think it's good. If he foresees, you know, a scenario where, you know, where it doesn't go down like last season, and you just have one tribe completely eliminate the other tribe, then this is actually a smart play. Because then, you know, when old tribe colors are washed away and everybody is truly playing for themselves, he's in the best position because he's made inroads with Upolu that nobody else has. Which seems like no big deal, except that there's six of them and five Savaii. And actually now there's four.
Four, yeah.
Right. So that's six people that he's got ins with and four people who he's burned bridges with. Which, there's a degree to which he's picked that up. Now, on the other hand, obviously he's the seventh person in a seven-person alliance, which is a step down. But, I think it can go either way. And there's a degree to which I respect his desire to take luck out of the equation, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing that I thought would appeal to you, is that, you know, he didn't want all of the work he's put into this point to come down to whether or not he makes the 1-8 shot. So, I definitely respect that, and I think, you know, you kind of come to a point in any game where, you know, if the power's out of your hands, you kind of take whatever step you can, and it's gonna really piss off one side. And it's gonna really, you know.
Yeah.
And you just gotta you kind of do it, you know.
Yeah. And on the flip side, you know, it's distinctly possible that the first person out doesn't go to the jury. So, you know, if the first couple of people out can be Savaii people, then that's two less people that he has to even worry about being on the jury that he pissed off, you know?
Yeah, if they even decide to go to the two, you know it's not going to be 10 on the jury, so...
Right, right.
Yeah.
There was something else, and I can't remember what it was now.
Was it Rick? Were you going to talk about Rick?
No. That was completely inconsequential.
No, I loved Rick. Like, when his name came up, he had this, like, great...
Oh, because he was, like, shocked? Like, what the heck?
Even though there's no reason to be shocked at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's just random. I mean...
If anything, you should be, like, thrilled. It's like, yes! It's like, the worst that happens is, you know, I get left out of the rock competition. You know?
Well, if he knows that his tribe is stronger than the other tribe.
And that was never in doubt, at least according to the production, you know?
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way. It certainly seemed
that way.
Never
in doubt.
Yeah. Is there anything else to talk about with Tribal here?
Well, what do you think about Cochrane already, like...
Oh, yeah, that was it. That was my other thing, yes.
like, why is he already telling everyone?
Why did he rat himself out?
Yeah. What is there to gain by doing it right then at the vote?
That was weird. And, I mean, the only thing I can think of is he must have something good up his sleeve here. Because, I mean...
You're a lot more optimistic about...
Oh, I'm definitely very optimistic. I mean, because why else do you rat yourself out that quickly? Otherwise, I mean, I guess part of it is... I guess there's a degree to which it's smart to rat yourself out that quickly because they're going to come to that conclusion inside of 30 seconds anyway, so you might as well do it for them, and at the very least, you owned up to it, you know? But the fact that he says I'll explain it, this should be interesting. I was really hoping we would get at least a sentence of it in the preview for next week, but we didn't. We just got them all bagging on him for being a turncoat.
Guys, look, Keith was going to take this whole game down from the inside. I had to kick him out.
Yeah, all right. Keith was gonna flip. If it hadn't been him they voted for, he was gonna flip.
To me.
He told
he was like,
me,
"Here's what we're gonna do."
He confided in me over all of you about this. That's actually good. I like that. That's like that actually I think is the best you could do, right?
Except when you go to Redemption Island and you find out the real story.
Like, well, okay, but...
And then it's like, it's his word against mine.
Right. And ultimately, Keith's not there to defend himself. He's on Redemption Island. With a little bit of luck, he gets clipped at the next Redemption Island, and, you know, you're none the worse for wear.
All right. So are we transitioning then?
Yeah, let's do this. I'm excited about this.
So, Chris, over the week, proposed that we draft the remaining survivors onto two teams, and then... we end up on either side of a wager where there will be odds given one way or the other via Chinese auction. This is a proud tradition that we've had amongst us and our friends of betting,
for a long time, and there's been a drought. And I'm going through withdrawal. It's so bad that yesterday, I'm not even kidding, I bet Fruit Cup on Tom Cruise's age with one of my office mates at school.
Wow.
Okay, so...
What side of that did you end up on?
It was an offhandish comment I made that I said, Tom Cruise has got to be over 50. And I felt confident in the statement. I didn't feel like it was hyperbole or anything. I felt confident that he was over 50. Because my follow-up was, think about it, Risky Business was a long time ago. And I got somebody who was like, no, I don't think he's over 50. And she had a little thing of Mott's applesauce, one of those singleton packages. And I had a little singleton package of Dole peaches. And I said, I will put up a fruit cup against your applesauce. And it took a little cajoling to get her to go along with the bet. I think she was a little bit taken aback with how vehemently I wanted to make this bet. And then the third party person looked it up, and once we said the bet was on, she said, okay, he turns 50 in 2 months or something like that. I literally lost by less than a year. Which I feel like is actually not bad, considering I set the line myself.
Yeah.
On an offhand comment. So.
Right, yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Did she enjoy your peaches?
I don't know if she ate them yet or not. We have a mini fridge, so they might just be sitting in the mini fridge.
Well, okay, so this is our long way of saying we are leaving our recap mode and we're going into a different era. So if this doesn't appeal to you, you know, you can tune out. Not that you're listening, but
if
you want
to
stick around,
tough noogies, find a different podcast.
If you want to stick around, I think you'll like where this is heading. So
Go listen to Rob Cisternino's podcast if you don't like this.
Right.
All right. So, do you want first pick, or do you care? Do you have a? Are you prepared?
If there was some way we could toss a coin, and
I mean, it doesn't really matter because ultimately we're not actually picking our own teams. We're just picking to create two separate teams.
That's correct. I forgot about that.
Because we're ultimately going to then auction off prices on the teams.
Right. Who's responsible for recording the results of this?
I'm ready to record.
Okay. I'm just listing out the team members here on my computer so I can...
Okay. Shall I draft first, then?
You can think about your first choice.
Oh, I already know who I'm doing.
Don't say anything yet. I just...
Okay. And we're gonna snake draft, right?
Right. So you, and then two for me, two for you, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Right. I'm ready when you are.
All right. I'm going to guess that your first pick is Keith.
False.
Oh.
Yeah, my first pick is the guy who's one step closer than everybody else.
It's not your team.
Yeah.
You know?
Keith isn't at the bottom of my list, I'll tell you that much.
It's just a team.
Right. There's a degree to which I guess there's some gameplay even in the drafting, because if you actually draft according to how you think, then you get then the other person gets an idea of how what you think of these players.
Exactly.
So I got to be careful. So I'm actually going to game my drafting a little here.
Yeah. What do you think I was going to do?
We are at level 3, everybody, just in case you're wondering. All right. So I'm gonna make the first pick. I'm taking Albert for Team A.
All right. I want Sophie.
Sophie on Team B.
I want... Coach.
Okay. I guess just for the symmetry, I'll put Ozzy on Team A then. And let's put Dawn with him.
Okay.
On Team
okay.
A.
Okay. I want best friends Keith and Cochran on Team B.
Keith and Cochran go to Team B. Okay. I will then put. I'm gonna put Brandon and Jim on Team A here.
All right, I want the country couple, Rick and Whitney.
Okay. And that leaves Edna for my team. Do you have them written down as well, I hope?
So that you can refer to just them? Rattle them off.
All right, Team A is Albert, Ozzy, Dawn, Jim, Brandon, and Edna. And then Team B is the remaining players, Sophie, Coach, Keith, Cochran, Rick, and Whitney.
Okay, so we'll make team. You know, flip a coin. I don't want this to be determined in any way.
Okay,
just flip a coin.
So hold on one second here. Getting up my random number generator here.
Oh my god!
Over 50% on the random number generator will be Team B, under 50% will be Team A.
Done.
And random number generator came up with 0.86, so Team B, the price on Team B is going to be
$10.
$10.
Got
it. And now you and I are going to start bidding in quarter increments, minimum quarter increments, on Team A.
All right.
To take Team A.
All right.
So do you want to open the bidding? I opened the draft, so you
open the bidding. I will open the bidding at $4 to your $10.
Okay, so you're willing to put up $4 to take that team. I'll put up $5 to take Team A.
I will put up $6 for Team A.
Okay. This is tough. This is tougher to evaluate than this is for the listeners. This format here has actually been done before by us. We did a NBA MVP draft where we drafted, I believe, teams of four players. And it was a lot. I gotta say, it was a lot easier to evaluate. Granted, we were looking at this in like late February for last season. So it was a lot easier to assess, you know, who had a good chance than it is now with these teams. But so your bid was $6 on Team A, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh God. I'll bid $6.50 on Team A.
Mm-hmm. You want me to believe that? You want me to believe that it pains you to bid $6.50 on Team A?
What pains me is trying to assess the value of these two teams so quickly here.
Deal with it.
Without having a long, drawn-out silence on our podcast here.
Right, no. I'm going up to $7 on Team A.
Okay. This will be really, really boring if we end up just putting up $10 each. So you went to $7?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go to $7.50 on Team A.
Mm-hmm. I'll go to $8.
$8.25.
I will go $8.75.
Interesting. Suddenly you're now willing. Oh no, you have always been doing 50-cent increments. I'll go to $9.
Sophie Coach Keith Cochran Rick Whitney. I'll go to $9.50.
I'll go to $9.75.
I'll go to $10.25.
Oh, okay, good. That was nice of you to skip $10.
Skip over the $10.
So someone's getting odds.
You can't sell there. You're not selling.
I wouldn't have anyway. Yeah, I'll do. You went to 10.25. I'll do 10.50.
Going to 11.
I'll go to 11.25.
I'll go to $11.75.
I'll go to $12.
What are we at? Plus 120 right now on the.
Sure. Way to overcomplicate it.
Make sure I understand what's going on here.
We've actually entered law-breaking territory now, I believe. we could officially get ourselves in trouble now, because I think obviously gambling is like illegal almost everywhere in some form or another or whatever, but I believe the laws for Illinois allow up to $10 as a single wager. So we crossed that threshold.
You know, given the corruption in Illinois, I'm sure they have better things to do.
Yeah, we're gonna get locked up over the extra $3 or whatever that gets spent over the limit here.
Yeah.
So I bid $12, and it's on you.
Yeah, it is. It is on me, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
12.50.
I'll go to 13.
See, I feel like. I'm just about to like give you information on this.
I know,
idea.
Right? Earlier when you said, "Oh, we'll just explain our thought idea. Process so that we don't have dead air on the podcast."
Yeah,
explaining thought process sounds great until you realize you're giving your opponent information.
Right, so
in this
let me
wager.
Phrase this: you know, you got this person and they got this thing, and then like you worry about this other thing. So you think
okay,
about this thing.
I think what you're doing is worse than dead air right now.
No, yeah, no, it's clearly that's why I'm going to stop. Sold.
Sold. $13. Is that
selling.
What
I will
did?
Take odds. I will give me those points.
Yep. Okay. So, Chris putting up $13 has Albert, Ozzy, Dawn, Jim, Brandon, and Edna, and Ralph putting up $10 has Sophie, Coach, Keith, Cochran, Rick, and Whitney.
I'm really worried about Rick and Whitney.
Yeah. Well, see, we should do a little breakdown here. This is good. Now that the bet's locked in, we can actually reveal
right.
our thought process. That was what I started doing. I was like, okay, just look at the teams and figure out how many duds you have on the team. You're just like, this guy is like 4% to win, and you know, Keith, I think, is like 4% to win because I think if he comes back, he's coming back to a tribe of people that aren't going to want him around anyway and are going to vote him out the second he doesn't win immunity. Rick is going to have to speak in order to win, so. And, you know, and Whitney. Whitney has a better chance than Keith or Rick, I think, on the Natalie White. game plan, you know.
Well, I really hate what I bought here. Like,
yeah.
Buyer's remorse.
I know. At this point, I could convince you to, I could convince you to sell this bet to somebody else for $4.
Scare you out from under my $10.
To be fair, I really like Sophie and Coach right now.
Yeah.
And yeah. There's, you know, the sentimental part of me likes
Cochran.
Were you? I certainly wondered if you were going to try and play on my
love of Cochran.
Soft spot for Cochran to
nah.
see if you could drive up,
nah.
get a low price.
I know you're not sentimental when it comes to money.
No, it's true. With no. bets, I'm pretty good at being divorcing.
All right, let's wrap it up. You had a long day.
Yeah, we did. The good news is I think I only have one dud on my side. I think even Brandon's got a shot now. Because he seems to have quieted all the demons. Edna's my only dud.
Edna's your dud.
Yeah. I probably was willing to go to like $14 on Team A here.
Yeah.
Maybe a little higher. Yeah. All right, so to put a bow on it, by the way, I have an idea. I think in the future we should do question and answer. So this is a call to our listeners. We implore you. Send us an email. Email us a question. Tweet a question. You can tweet us at Tribal Podcast. That's our Twitter handle. And the email address is podcast@tc.vanby.net. If you email us or tweet us a question that is even remotely related to Survivor, any question.
Or about Chris and Ralph.
We will use it on the air. And because we're willing to use any question, we're going to call this promotion Anyvember.
I love how circular this has become. Like,
it's Anyvember, guys. Any question.
If you ask questions about Stat Boy Victor, we will also address those questions.
Sure. Unless you are Victor. Which is distinctly possible because you're probably 25% of our listening.
All right. Well, so to the two of you listening out there, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure bringing this to you for the last hour.
Yeah, you've tolerated a long podcast.
On behalf of my co-host Chris, I'm Ralph, and we'll see you next week.